I comfortably won the Angry Golfer Award that year. And to make matters even worse, not only was I an angry golfer, not only was I a really poor golfer, I was completely oblivious to a lot of the rules and to actually the fact that coming up the 18th on the final day, that match had everything riding on it. Yeah. That match was the decider for the tournament, right? So like, I'm coming up there. I had no idea this was the case.
And were you all square coming up the 18th?
We were. I think we were.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we were all square coming. And I hit a really nice drive up the fairway and then proceeded to just sclaff my way all the way up to the green and then probably like four putted or something. And then it was like, yes, well done, mate. You've lost it for the entire team. You know?
Come back next year.
Welcome back, folks, to your second ever edition of Golf Buddies Allowed on behalf of the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. Thank you if you listened to the first edition, or rather volume one, as Ben and I called it. I personally enjoyed that a lot. It was something slightly different format to what has become the usual. And so Ben, who I am joined here again by, we've decided to do this a bit more regularly, do it a couple of times a month on alternate weeks when we still fully intend to do guest episodes. But Ben and I are taking the opportunity as golf buddies, golf friends, to do this on the regular. So Ben, how are you this fine Thursday evening?
I am good, other than the fact that the weather is absolutely horrendous in Norfolk at the moment. But other than that, yeah. Life is not so bad at the moment. Half term this week, so it always feels a bit like I have a bit of a more relaxed week than I would normally from a work perspective for some reason. I don't know why. So I suppose you're not rushing around to school, things like that. But
yeah, and quieter roads as well, right?
I don't ever go out. I work from home the night, so I never need to go out and see. So literally yesterday, stayed at my in-laws last night. So Brian and I were going to have a day night, but as you know, she was running the Edinburgh Marathon on Sunday and she pulled her hamstring halfway around, and she's then subsequently also got a horrendous cold off the back of basically being in the rain for 8 hours in a not so sunny Scotland. So she wasn't feeling too well yesterday. But I took the dog out for a walk after work, and it was the first time I'd actually gone out of the house all day, and that's how I like it. I only like going out of the house to play golf. That's about it.
Well, that, as far as I'm concerned, and as I'm sure many of our listeners will be concerned, that if that's your only reason for getting out,
that's a good one. Yeah. How about you? You good?
Yeah, good. Yeah, pretty good, Ben. Thank you very much. Yeah, doing good. Plenty to chat about this evening as far as golf-related themes are concerned and general life stuff as well, I'm sure. So, yeah, we're recording this on the last Thursday in May, Thursday the 30th of May. And I think by the time this episode becomes available to our listeners, will be the weekend of around the 8th or 9th of June, which will be just a week away from the Golf for Sands challenge that we're doing, Ben. So just a quick recap on that for our listeners in case they missed it last time or in case someone's coming in for the first time and listening. So Ben and I, as again, some of our listeners will know this already, are going to be joined by our friend Mike Harris, the three of us who are unfortunately members of a club that no father ever really wants to be a member of, and we now have lifetime membership of, Ben, is a bereaved father's club. And we are doing a charity golf challenge in association or in support of Sands, one of the UK's, I say UK, I don't know if they're internationals. I think they're just UK.
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Yeah. UK leading charity at supporting families, parents like us who have suffered and endured baby loss. So myself, Ben and Mike are doing an all-day golf challenge on Friday the 14th of June at Prince's Golf Club in Kent, at which Mike is a member, and Mike has sorted us out there to play for the whole day. We've set ourselves a 1,000 British pounds fundraising target, and at the time of speaking, We are £385 through that target. So, yeah, obviously the funds that we're raising are going to go to a very, very good cause, which ultimately is a cause very dear to all three of us, and I would imagine a cause which is going to be dear to and will affect many of our listeners, either directly, indirectly, you know, because I don't know about you, Ben, but certainly through the process of losing Innes last year, I've learned a lot about baby loss. I think you and I have talked about this before. Yeah. And I think if Sands, going by some of the stuff that Sands have shared with me, it's quite alarming, really, to see how at least 15% of pregnancies end in miscarriage, for example. So if you go by that statistic alone, baby loss is just something which occurs way more commonly than people realize. And in my case, I only really came to realize these things when baby loss happened to us. So,
well, that's the thing with it. You never know that, those figures until you're actually in it anyway. Like if you were to go and ask people who'd never had that sort of stuff, they wouldn't know. It's one of those sad facts that, you know, one of the, not sad facts, one of the shocking facts, I suppose, that you're only ever exposed to when you experience it, I think, generally speaking, unless you've got people like us who are trying to get the word out there that this is quite a common thing. And as you know, you end up, when you're in this weird club, you end up realizing that it happens to a lot more people than you would expect, because people don't tend to talk about it. You know, it's still quite a taboo subject. I can't remember if we were talking about this when we talked about it on the original episode we did, when we were talking about Dylan and all of the stuff there. But it feels to me a bit like what cancer was like back in the 80s and 90s, where there was this misconception that you could catch cancer and things like that. So people just didn't talk about that sort of stuff back then. But then you can see all of the work that all of those cancer charities have done in the last 20, 25 years, where actually it's, you know, people realize how common it is. I think is it the Stand Up to Cancer thing where they say one in two people are going to be affected by or are going to have got cancer in the UK by the time they, you know, so it's something ridiculous like that. But it's seen in such a different light now. Like there's a lot more sort of positivity around cancer treatments and around research that goes into it, all of that kind of stuff. One of my previous bosses actually now works with cancer research, and some of the stuff they're doing is, you know, is quite incredible. And I would like one day for there to be that same sort of ethos around stillbirth, neonatal death, you know, all of that kind of stuff, so that people are not afraid to talk about it and realize that they're not in it alone. And, you know, it just helps people to support them through that stuff.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, that's a really good point because, again, you know, I think something I've mentioned before as it relates to, say, SANS or baby loss charities, for instance, and again, where the money that they raise goes towards, as a tangible example, is putting on support groups for bereaved parents. And mm-hmm. Kim and I attended a support group like that in December last year, I think it was. And it was, you know, I would absolutely stop short of saying I enjoyed it. That's definitely an inappropriate word, but it was very, very cathartic. It helped. Ultimately, I think with anything like this, the shared experience and being in a room with others who have been through that thing and them opening up about it and sharing things that, you know, you can relate to, you can all relate to each other. And it just starts to...
Makes you feel less alone, right?
It makes you feel less alone, exactly. Mm. And so I would like to think that, again, with the money that we raise, it's going to go to very practical and tangible things like that, which, speaking from first-hand experience, will help other parents out there. And I think, again, I think, Ben, it's fair to say that you, me, and Mike are doing this to raise awareness too, you know, because going to the point you were just talking about cancer, I mean, that's frightening to think. I didn't realize it was like that back in the day, talking about cancer. I think there's still very much this, there is a taboo, there's a stigma, and I think often parents feel silenced by, for whatever reason, and when it comes to talking about baby loss. So I think the more that we can talk about it, the more we can normalize it and hopefully offer hope to and inspiration to others that have been through it, are going through it, or may yet to experience it. And I think maybe, you know, the final thing I'll say here on before you know, we maybe move on to maybe talking briefly about the challenge itself, because I'm buzzing for that in terms of what we do and getting out and playing as much golf as we can, either until our bodies give up on us or the sun goes down, whichever comes first. But
It's definitely going to be when our bodies give up. I told you the sun's not setting until like 9:45 that day. Are we going to be playing from 5:30 in the morning?
Yeah, that's... I mean, I'm determined. I'm belligerently determined when it comes to these things. I will keep going, even though, like, I'll have a two-thirds.
Do you know how long that day is of playing golf?
Yeah, I do. I realize, but
we're talking about 18 hours of golf, right? Have I worked that out right? No, 17 hours of golf. It's going to get dark, but sun's going to go down a quarter today. It won't actually get dark until 10, right?
This excites me, Ben.
17 hours of golf.
17 hours of doing nothing but the thing you enjoy the most.
Agreed. But there's something about doing how much you enjoy and then the physical pain that's going to come with doing this. And I think this is the thing, right? You know, we all have played some of it. You know, some people play 36 holes on a day. You know, fair play to them. I would find that a bit of a struggle personally. But people who play golf know how much their bodies ache after they get off after 18 holes. And we're just going to keep going. So I keep sort of justifying it to myself that I'm trying to understand how people are going to feel motivated to sponsor me for doing or to sponsor us for doing this when I am doing something I love literally all day. But I must stress that my body is not prepared for this. So it is going to be fucking painful when I'm going through it. But I am determined. I like you. I am determined to get as much in there as I can and go for the full 17 hours. But
do you know the way I would like to, for example, I'd like to look at this? It's like, if you know, say, for example, like, you know, you're talking about your wife, Brian, who's just done the Edinburgh Marathon. She, like whoever else, will go into that with a target in mind as to, I want to get a certain time. Now, my benchmark for this, for instance, is I did the longest day golf challenge, the 72 golf, 72 hole golf challenge for 72 holes for Prostate Cancer UK. I did that a few years ago, right? And yes, I was physically broken, probably mentally broken by the end of it too. But if we can play 73 holes, then that's it. I've kind of incrementally gone up on what I did last time, you know. So that's But anyway. Rounding out the pit. So I guess the call to action for our listener here is, if you would like to donate, we'd be delighted if you chose to do that. We will put our Just Giving link in the show notes. Alternatively, if you know that's totally fine. If you prefer not to do that, there are other ways in which you can support our cause. One, for example, is even just sharing this podcast episode with other people who, you know, may be affected by this subject, because, you know, it's something that Ben and I talk about regularly. Do you know another thing as well, Ben? What I'd love is if there are other people out there who, for example, are doing a Golf for Sands challenge, who pick up on our conversation and actually get in touch with us. Mm. You can contact us directly over at golfyourselfhealthy.com. There's a contact tab there. And we'd just love to hear what you're doing, where are you doing it, how are you doing your challenge? Are there any members of Prince's Golf Club out there? What do we need to know? Like, tell us, give us some local course knowledge, anything like that. You know, so there are, have I missed anything in terms of ways of supporting, Ben?
No, I don't think so. I think it's probably worth saying that you'll be posting the Just Giving thing on your pretty much all your socials. I imagine you probably got a little space for it in the website as well. You can pop it, can you?
What's that? The Golf Yourself Healthy website.
Can you put the link for Just Giving link into that?
Steady on. That's beyond my technical capabilities.
Come on, man! Goodness sake! Yeah, fine. But yeah, as I said, I think the thing that I want to get across is, whilst it looks like we're going to have a fantastic day out, which I'm sure the listener, we will be having a great day out, it will not be a walk in the park. It's not going to be easy to do this, I don't think. So it's going to be interesting to see how well, certainly my body holds up to it.
I'm sure the listener's heart bleeds for you, Ben, saying those very, very, very words.
Playing a prince is in Kent. Yes,
I know. I guess it's a tough life.
Just hope the sun's shining. That'll be the key thing for me.
Well, that's absolutely right. The final thing I'll say in this for now is, we are intending to, the three of us, record a podcast episode at the end of it, which I think that could potentially be quite loose, just given that we're going to be, we're going to be mentally and physically broken, and just I think we might lose all control of, like, you know, it'll be. I don't think it'll be loose. I think it'll just be verbal diarrhea.
Basically, yeah. Although, to be fair, I would have had all day with you chatting to me and me chatting to you. We may have decided that we've had enough of each other's voices. It might only be a 5-minute podcast at the end. Say, right, I'm going to bed.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think our bodies might chew you just to carry us to bed anyway. But anyhow, so, you know, I guess there's quite a lot to chat about. I think in terms of, I mean, let's firstly, in terms of your golf, your preparation for the Golf for Science Challenge, since we last did a Golf Buddies Allowed conversation a week or two ago, Ben, have you got any golf in? Have you been playing much?
I haven't, no. I couldn't last weekend because Bryony was away for most of the weekend. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to. And then the weather's just been rubbish this week. Normally, I would have gone out one day after work or something this week, but it's just been chucking down with rain all week. So I'm kind of feeling like I need to force myself out in the weather. But it is, like, the weather has been insanely bad in Norfolk. Like, it's been really, really wet. So I don't think I would be getting a huge amount out of it. So I probably will tomorrow do, if the weather's rubbish, probably do 6 miles on the treadmill just to walk on that incline, just to get me as I'm trying to build that up a little bit as I'm as I'm going, so I can just get my knees and stuff into some, the muscles in my legs into some sort of shape, which will be kind of the minimum. But I've got the day off work tomorrow and I've got a day with Jensen. So we've suggested that if the weather is better, I might go up to the golf club with him tomorrow. So see if I can get him out. He can drive the buggy around. He can drive me around 18 holes on the buggy. That'll be fun for him, won't it?
That's how, yeah. You're really getting into this. Like, you're obviously harboring a lot of hopes that introductory session that Jensen had to golf is gonna get the bug.
Oh, so he's been having lessons every week, mate. He loves it. He loves it. Honestly, he's going straight back out. We stay for dinner, and then he would be like, right, can we go back out to the putting green? Can we go back to the driving range? And then he has half an hour, 45 minutes just practicing on his own.
You see that right there, Ben? That is the dream. Your it child.
Brilliant.
It's like, because, you know, you go to Brian and say, hey, look, Jensen's insistent that we go and play golf. I'm just going to have to oblige, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. That's basically the angle I'm going with. I am even, and I feel like this might be a bit sacrilegious, but I am even contemplating getting Brian your own clubs and saying, why don't the three of us do it? The problem I've got with that is that then when I decide that I want to go and have a round of golf on my own, or I want to go and have a round of golf with some mates, a couple of beers afterwards, is she going to want to come? As much as I love spending time with my wife, my golf is sometimes like the time away from that, which she's aware of, by the way. I have told her this. So it's not, I'm not going to get beaten up for this when she listens to this podcast.
Well, you floated this. So there's a couple of things I would say to this. I would say, speaking from experience, careful what you wish for, because Kim, as I'm sure, so you floated a suggestion a while back when you and I first came up with the idea to do our little, you know, our twice a month Golf Buddies Allowed podcast sessions. You said, episode ideas, we'll do like a Golf Widows one where we get our wives on and we talk about their take on, like, what golf means to their husbands and things. And I thought, again, I've been trying to work on Kim and saying, oh, you know, let's do it. Let's have that conversation. But I think the danger is, if she were to come on, then she would tell you a number of home truths about some of the domestics that we've had out on a golf course. And I'm not quite sure my brand is ready for the fallout.
No, fair. Yeah, I think maybe that's, we'll let the podcast evolve a little more before we start bringing that sort of shade into into the purview of the listener.
I think it's a wonderful idea and all in good time, but...
Yes. And don't get me wrong, right? I don't think Bryony would be adverse to taking up golf. I don't think she's in a position where she wants to do it now. But yeah, I can definitely see some benefits with it, right? If she did take up golf, because I think she would get the bug for it. She's played hockey when she was at school, so she's got decent hand-eye coordination. Well, so she says. I mean, I never saw her play hockey. She could have been dreadful then, for all I know, but... You know, if she did take it up, it would be quite cool if we went on holiday somewhere and the three of us could go out and get around in. But
it would. And Kim and I have done that before. You know, about 5 years ago now, we went to Spain, and you know, Kim was quite active in her golf then, and it, at a point in time, so much so that me getting the business case across the line to go via Your Golf Travel to book us a holiday destination which had golf as a central theme, you know, but you know, but don't worry, there's loads of great tourist activities and things to do in the surrounding vicinity, you know. Golf is the main protagonist. But so anyway, we went to Soto Grande, I think it was, in Spain, and it was nice, we really enjoyed that. Obviously golf in the sunshine is always
it's
helpful,
a different
as
thing
well
anywhere,
for,
isn't it?
For the mood and the experience. But in terms of my training for the Golf for Sands challenge, I think certainly getting a good amount of golf practice in. I just this morning was at a golf lesson with my coach Neil Matthews.
So yesterday you were going for that. How's that going?
Really good, really good. So we were working on pitching today, and because I think short game for me, and by that I mean sort of anything sort of chipping and also like those kind of knee knocker 50-yard, 75-yard shots or whatever are an issue for me. So working on that a bit, which was good. And he set me a practice plan. So, you know, I'm going to try and find however many hours a week that I can just to, so I've just joined a local golf club to me, which is a 9-hole course called Brecon Golf Club. So it's a really nice, modest, humble course which doesn't have any airs or graces about it. It's not going to set the heather alight. It's not, you know, it's well maintained for you know, for its standard or and its location or whatever, but it's, you know, the greens aren't necessarily the best. But ultimately what it is good for, I think, is just all round. It's like a practice ground for me, really. You know, it's so I'm going to use that. And then, you know, I think it was £280 for a year's introductory membership. Oh, right. So, which is, you know, in the grand scheme of things, and you and I both know, and many people out there will know as well, like, golf has this reputation of not being an accessible or affordable sport. I mean, I think as far as golf memberships go, that's about the cheapest I've ever come across, right? You know, so, and if you were to set foot on it, I'm pretty sure you would agree that that's incredibly good value for the condition it's in, relatively speaking. Right. So I'm going to try and use that as my kind of practice ground facilities. And then also, like I said before, with the time off, the sabbatical I've had from my day job, I've tried to go here, there and everywhere and combine podcast recordings with going and playing a new course. So just this, tomorrow and Saturday, in fact, I'm going to go back to Cleve Hill tomorrow for a round with a friend, Jacoby, who works there and is a member there as well. So playing with him tomorrow, which I'm really looking forward to. Just love that place. You and I should get up there together sometime.
It does look spectacular. I've seen some of the Instagram stuff on there. It's incredible.
It is, and it's put it this way. I think it's actually it's a fairly trendy place in relation to, it's one of these places which, if you, you know, in the relatively short time that Golf Yourself Healthy has been running, I'm seeing in social media there are all, I mean, there is a plethora of golf influencers out there, but there's a lot of, you know, I don't know if you've come across Manners Golf, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those guys have done a lot of filming and things up at Cleve Hill recently. And
he does the stuff with that short side guy, doesn't he, that Manners Golf?
That's right, yeah. James, I can't remember his name, short side for Manners. Yeah,
he's the Scottish chap, isn't he, the short side, the one who's like quite monotone in his voiceovers, but I actually find it quite, it's like ASMR stuff, isn't it? It's quite nice to hear him talk about things with like no emotion.
So I know a guy who knows James. I'm going to pass that feedback on through James James, my mate Ben is...
Yeah, could tell you him set up on OnlyFans.
He really likes your voice. Like, could you record a few ASMR tracks for him, please? Yeah, nice. Yeah, so I'm sure he'll appreciate that. So a bit of a side hustle for him if Manners doesn't work out. But anyway, so going to Cleve Hill tomorrow, and then on Saturday I'm going to Conway Golf Club, which is in North Wales. And my reason for going up there is I am in the final stages of doing a training course to become what is called a community golf instructor.
Oh, right.
So the home nation governing bodies in the UK, Wales Golf, England Golf, Scotland Golf, Ireland Golf, etc., have rolled out this fantastic initiative, which is to train up a new skilled workforce of golf instructors. So, you know, within the context of obviously diversity and inclusion, trying to get more children into the game, also trying to get more adults into the game. But also, I think it talks to seemingly the shortage of coaching professionals, you know, in coaches or instructors around the UK. Because like, if you take the area of Wales I live in, for example, in mid Wales, a lot of golf clubs around here just simply don't have golf professionals on the books to actually deliver sessions to. So there's like a there's a shortage. And so it's been really enjoyable doing the last few weeks of online training content. I've had a bit of imposter syndrome playing out there, because quite a few of the participants in that training are people who already have experience of doing like voluntary junior sessions at the golf clubs, and they know what they're talking about. But I've had a lot of reassurance from the people that have been doing the training, you know, who are doing a fantastic job of it. And it's really interesting learning is that, you know, I think there's really, it's all about the key values and principles are about delivering golf sessions to whether it's kids or adults that are, you know, engaging, they're inclusive. And it's less about, you know, me nor any of the people that are coming out of this training course are going to be expected to be delivering. You're not doing it to make a living out of it necessarily. Sure. You're doing it to do it on a voluntary basis,
or maybe
give something back to the community, right? And so, but actually, do you know something on this? It kind of, through the training I've been having, it's kind of got me to thinking about, I mean, inclusivity is this very key theme within that training. And it's something that's important to me and is important to Golf Yourself Healthy. But I guess it got me to thinking about just the importance of it in the context of how, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but if I look back on my youth and when I was at primary school or secondary school or whatever, and I would do, you know, I would be the participant in sports coaching. And I can think of, do you know what, honestly, I can think of quite few examples of really inspiring sports coaches that I had in my youth. Because my experience was like, you know, I was never one of the, I was a goalkeeper, for example, when I played football. And I always feel like keepers got the short end of the stick. You know, they never got any specialist coaching, or they did a little bit, but they were kind of, coaches would have their favorites, or coaches would only actually invest time in the players that they actually thought were going to be the best players in the team, or, you know, they were trying to coach them on to a more elite level or whatever. And so I think I'm determined to, if I pass this training, is to try and be the most inclusive golf coach that I can be, to sort of, because I've talked before about how my own early experiences with golf were, I just didn't feel like I fitted or I belonged there. And I think the you know, I hope in that regard I can, because I've got that firsthand experience of that, I can try and, you know, just give everyone a good experience. But yeah, I don't know if you've had any, you know, you can, whether it's for you or as you, because I don't know if you've observed as a parent any of Jensen's classes now that he's doing at Royal Norwich, you know?
Yeah, I think he's obviously early days with his thing, but I think one of the things that I quite like about what they're doing at our place is that it's much more, like when we were reading through, you have like the pack you have to sign up to when you're signing your kid up for the academy there. It's quite extensive. It's got quite a lot of stuff in there. Usual bump and things like that. But one of the things they've got is they have effectively like a code of ethics. And it's not necessarily about the golf per se. It's about kind of the behavior that's kind of expected from the kids. So it's less about focusing on the talent. It's more about focusing on the social element of it and what's acceptable to do. You've got to make sure you're listening to your coaches. You know, you've got to treat people the way that you want to be treated, all that kind of stuff, which I really quite like. And I think in his group, so he's in the group that's kind of like the beginners group. They've got, I think they literally have like six different groups throughout the day that go in, and they're usually around about 10 to 15 kids in each group. So they've got quite an extensive academy thing down there. And I don't know exactly how they do it, but I'm assuming that the ones that start at 10 are the more skilled kids that have been playing for quite a long while, and you kind of move up the groups as you get better. But so he's in, like, I would say, you know, there's a real mix of some kids who get it, some kids who don't. And he's still, you know, he's starting to get it. He's starting to take the instruction a little bit, but he's definitely not, you know, he's not a natural swinger of a golf club, I would say, at the moment. And that will come with time, I think, you know, once he gets to that side of it. So I don't necessarily see that they're treating him any differently than they're treating any of the others. And he's getting, no, this is sort of a proud moment for me, is that they were in the driving range and they were doing it in pairs and they were taking it in turns. And one of the guys that was instructing there was trying to help him get his starts right, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I largely try and stay out of getting involved in that side of things because I think, A, I'm not a brilliant golfer. I'm all right. I'm an average golfer. And I probably learn a lot of things the wrong way. So me telling him what to do might be the wrong thing for me to tell him. So I'd rather someone who's actually got a bit of nous actually gets him to do those things. And he hit a couple of all right shots as part of this thing. But then at the end of it, they split them into two teams. So one team of seven, one team of eight or something on the other side. And they had to chip, it was like a 30-yard pitch shot basically to a set of cones. And he was the first one up and he got his sandwich out of his bag. Well, they all had to get their sandwich out of his bag. Got his sandwich out, and he absolutely nailed a shot perfectly the first time he did it. And the guy that was had been sort of coaching him was so pleased with him. And I could see the gentleman was just beaming off the back of that. And I thought, that's what I need for him in this space, right? He needs to understand that if he concentrates and listens, he can make progress and he will get rewarded for that by the nice things that come of it. And I saw that with all of the kids there. At least we all know you're going to hit at least one good shot, right? When you're playing golf, at least one good shot. So every one of those kids hit good shots at some point in that thing, and every single one of them got the recognition for that. So I think that was a really good thing for me to see what their ethos is for coaching in that space. Now, whether that's the same everywhere, I don't know. I mean, I didn't have group lessons when I was a kid. I had a couple of one-to-one lessons. I think I mentioned before my brother was working at a golf club at the time, so he managed to get the pro there to give me some lessons. I think if I think about have I had teachers or coaches that have inspired me and have sort of given me kind of the confidence to sort of express myself? I have had those guys in the past. And the ironic thing being is that the coach that I played for the longest for was my brother, given that I joined his football team that he'd set up when I was 16 and I ended up playing for that football team for sort of a decade. Mm-hmm. He was never going to give me any plaudits, ever. So I was never expecting that. And I always wanted to play football to try and sort of prove to him that I could do it in a weird way. And yeah, I was never expecting to get any. I mean, he would always say to me, like now we talk about stuff, you know, we talk about playing back in the day. We were always quite complimentary to one another about the way in which we played football. But I think in his head, he couldn't give me any sort of open credit because it would make it look like he was treating me differently to the other players. So I got it, right? I understood why he was that way with me. But yeah, I suppose I have had football coaches that have been inspiring.
Yeah, that's a bit of a double-edged sword from Matt, your brother, isn't it? Like, and anyone that's in that scenario, because like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't in a way. Yeah, like you know, because like by not giving you any praise or whatever, then it kind of runs a risk of you being like,
what do I
have to do for you to love me?
Yeah, a little bit like that. I did feel a little bit like that. And I'm not saying he never gave me praise, but he never lavished praise on me, you know, and I don't blame him for that. As you know, like on reflection, what would I ever have expected? What would have been a reasonable thing for me to expect, you know? And actually, he probably played it right because we did all right when we played football together. So
you just made me think of something here. So, you know, given that, as we talked about when you and I recorded episode 2, right back at the beginning of Golf Yourself Healthy, and we spoke briefly about how we've kind of got to know each other ultimately through the Ryder Cup tournament that we do every year. And have you ever been paired with your brother?
Loads of times.
As a team?
Not with him. We're always on opposite sides of it. I don't think we've played in the same team. In the 10 years it's been going, I don't think we've been on the same side.
Wow.
I can't remember. I'll have to ask Coops. I'll ask Coops because he'll have a record of which teams have been in there. But yeah. I also don't know if we've played one another. I can't remember, mate. There's been so many of them. I literally can't remember.
Because I was just curious like how that dynamic plays out or whatever, given that you've just talked about in terms of you two growing up together and him being your coach or whatever.
The competitiveness for golf is different to what it would have been for football.
Yeah.
Significantly so. I think, you know, even when you play any sport against one another, I think even now, I think he still, gets annoyed if I beat him, and I still get a little bit annoyed if he beats me. But I'm much more, as I've talked about it before, right, my view is it's me against the golf course. And if I happen to be playing against somebody else, if I beat the golf course, I'm probably going to end up winning, because most of the time the golf course beats me. And in the same way, the golf course will be the person I'm playing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like whilst that is a competitive setting, it's not ultra competitive what we do in those annual trips. No. It's much more about us having a laugh together and enjoying each other's company, even if you're playing against someone. There's no real, it doesn't feel like there's any sort of rivalry. It's just that the golf is an excuse for us to get together and have a good time together, I feel like. And I would definitely say that more now. But if I think about you coming up the 18th at Crettingham on your first year and seeing how the blinding rage that was clearly emanating from you as you were walking up that fairway, I think it has, over the years, it's mellowed out a fair bit. That was so funny, so funny. First time I met you and like, just seeing you basically swing your clubs around and lose your rag, it was very amusing.
Well, okay, you brought it up now, and we're going to tell this. We're going to tell this story. I've already decided. Okay, no, we need to tell this story. But before you do, right? I'm going to say to the listener, you know, so we, Ben and I, will be doing this annual get together with all of our 20 or so mates, which actually will not, I don't, from what I understand, take the usual US. Europe, one team, you know, US, Europe, right? I don't know. I think so. It's an individual thing this year rather than a team thing, like individual Stableford over 3 days or whatever, which I'm interested to see how that goes. I feel like when that time approaches in September, and it's going overseas for the first time as well, the Ryder Cup. So it's going to be in France this year at Le Touquet. So looking forward to that, a new change of scene. But I think we need to do a sort of a special episode on that trip and sort of like share our favorite stories from that golf weekend. But you've teed one up, Ben, so you might as well tell it now. You can tell that story about me through your lens, and I'll also recall that story from my recollection.
No, hang on a minute. You tell the story and I'll tell you my reaction to it. All right.
Okay. So my recollection of this goes, so this must have been what, about 8 years ago now or something like that, at least.
Yeah.
This is at a point in time where I was poor at golf. Okay. Very poor. 28 handicap, which at that time was the maximum male handicap you could get. It was
definitely the maximum you were ever going to get coming to play at on the Ryder Cup stuff, wasn't it?
It was, but it wasn't enough, let's be honest. Bless my heart, it just was not enough. And I think it would be fair to say that I've worked on myself over the years, Ben, you know? I've worked on myself, and I am a calmer human being today than I was.
You'd have burst into a ball of flames if you hadn't worked on yourself, to be fair. By now, definitely would have caught fire at some point.
So I comfortably won the Angry Golfer Award that year. And to make matters even worse, not only was I an angry golfer, not only was I a really poor golfer, I was completely oblivious to a lot of the rules and to actually the fact that coming up the 18th on the final day, that match again, me and Stuart Pritchard, who, bless him, was also as bad at golf as I was.
Not as angry as you, though. She was much more laid back than you.
That match had everything riding on it. Yeah. That match was the decider for the tournament, right? So, like, I'm coming up there. I had no idea this was the case.
And were you all square coming up the 18th?
I think we were.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we were all square coming. And I hit a really nice drive up the fairway and then proceeded to just sclaff my way all the way up to the green and then probably like four putted or something. And then it was like, yes, well done, mate. You've lost it for the entire team. You know?
Come back next year. I just remember we were all there, and I remember because we were on the patio bit outside the bar, and it was like the 18th green was off to the right, so you could see down the fairway. And I thought, Chris is in the middle. I can't remember if we were on the same team or whether I was on Shoes team that year. I think I might have been on Shoes team that year. Or maybe I wasn't. I can't remember. Anyway, I remember seeing you in the middle of the fairway. And we were like, he's definitely not got there in one. That can't be his drive, surely. He must have, this must be his third shot. And then someone was like, no, he drove into there. And it's like an uphill approach, isn't it? It's a bit of a plateau green with a bunker short right, I think. Quite a big green as well. And then I think I saw you fat one, top one, and then hit a half sort of shot about 30 feet to the left of the pin, I think. And then I think it was a 3 or 4 putt. And then at the same time, you saw Stuart, fat one, top one, lock one 20 feet to the right of the pin. And then he 2 putted, I think, which is where he won it. And we were just like literally just falling about laughing because you were just cursing as you were coming up the fairway. Fuck this game. Fucking stupid. Swinging your clubs around. It was so funny. He would chuckle.
And it's, you know, but again, isn't it a wonder that I'm still playing now? You know, funnily enough, in the WhatsApp group for our this group that we're talking about, just yesterday, I think it was, Peter Watson sent this like meme or gif in, which is like from someone saying, I hate golf so much so I'm going to see how I feel about it again tomorrow when I go.
When I go play tomorrow, yeah.
And it's just curious how golf does that to us. Mm. But so I tell you what, though, so I think leading on from this is a point where I'm going to give an honourable mention to the Westminster Wanderers Golf Society, who I connected with on Instagram the other day. So something you said about our Ryder Cup thing made me think of these guys. And I think every one of these podcast conversations that we do, Ben, I think we should sort of give an honourable mention to people out there who just inspire us by the content, that what they're doing in golf. And these guys are hilarious and brilliant, right? So basically what they're doing, Westminster Wanderers Golf, I'll probably put a link to their Instagram page in the show notes. So these guys, to all intents and purposes, Ben, are our group that we were just talking about. But like, they do take it seriously with a healthy dose of banter at the same time. So they've got their own merchandise range. Okay, right. they've obviously got one guy in the group who's an absolute guru with like Photoshop or something like that, like Canva, where they've got all these templates. So it's like you know, in like the Sky Sports studio, for example, when it's like, oh, and at the 10:08 tea time, you've got Dave Smith, and so, and their mugshots appear on the screen. You've got all these guys like arms crossed, looking well serious, and playing off 23. Matt Smith is teeing off at 10:08 or whatever kind of thing, and it just, so they had this absolutely hilarious video, one of their reels, that I told the guy Tom, who's like their one of their lead guys. I was messaging him and I said, you made me jet spray hot tea all over my kitchen window the other day when I was watching this reel where the Pellet is the guy's name that he goes by. He's like the commissioner of Westminster Wanderers Golf. So they've gone to St. Andrews, the home of golf, right? I don't know if they were playing golf there, but they're standing on, you know, that bit by the 18th green at St. Andrews, that faint, like behind the, like standing on that, there's, it's not like a sort of a walkway patio bit or whatever kind of thing. You played the old course.
It's a road behind the 18th.
It's a road. So I think it's there. Or anyway, they're at the home of golf in St. Andrews, and he's standing there in his like mock green jacket or whatever it is. They host these major tournaments. They call it their majors, right? So he's announcing, he said, you know, welcome to the home of golf. the sixth Westminster Wanderers Golf Society tournament will be hosted not here, but at Hersham Golf Village in Surrey. And it's just, and I've played, I don't know, have you ever played at Hersham before?
I have, yeah, I've played there a few times. it's not really in the same league as the old course, it's, Andrews,
it's,
is it?
It's rough around the edges, right? But it's, do you know what I just loved so much about that? It's just like these guys just not taking this. They're clearly investing and they're taking it seriously to a degree, but it's all tongue in cheek. And it's, I just love all the different expressions of golf that there are out there on social media, you know, and some that don't take themselves too seriously. They're just having a bit of fun.
Yeah, I think you're right as well, because I think when you were saying earlier, there's so many different, I don't know the term influencers, but there's so many different like golf types of people out there now as well. Like, it's not just about professional golf or coaching. I mean, there are good coaches that you see on that stuff as well, but there are a lot of like average golfers that are making good, entertaining content on those platforms. There's a, I don't know if you've seen the guy that, I don't know if he's American or Canadian or something like that, who's trying to hit 18 pars in a row.
Yeah.
You've seen this guy? He's like on a day 109, Cheeky Golf Club,
yeah.
Yeah, he's on like day 109 or something, and he's done 6 pars in a row. It's his best so far, and you know, every day. And it was quite cool about that as well, because he plays at Mitcham Golf Club, which is where Kieran was a member for a long time as well. Our friend Kieran, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah.
He plays at Sandown, which is near where I grew up, Sandown Park Golf Club, in the middle of the horse track there. Perford Lakes as well, played there a few times. And, you know, it's quite cool. And the guy's like a 12 handicap, right? So he's like one of us trying to do this thing. And I honestly don't think he'll ever do it. The idea of getting 18 pars in a row. Or I suppose, does he count birdies? Does the birdies count towards his par count? Or does he have to get a par?
I guess, no. Well, they must do, right? Surely they must do.
You'd like to think so.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ridiculously harsh on yourself to say, like, oh, I did even better than the par, so it doesn't count, you know?
But yeah, yeah.
Do you know, actually, some now that you're mentioning that, I one of the golf podcasts that I listen to a lot, which again I've taken a lot of inspiration from, and in terms of designing and crafting Golf Yourself Healthy, is the Golfer's Journal. So they had a guy called Jared Dorfler as a guest on a few months back, and basically what Jared does is he's kind of like an independent golf journalist, if you like, who specializes in growing trends within the golf industry. So he does, he'll report a lot on like the business side of, like, you know, how Top Golf are doing in relation to their market share, and some of the really innovative trends that are going on in the business side of golf. And he spoke about how, if you look at the growth areas that there are in the game of golf, there were two or three that he mentioned. One, for example, was talking about this idea of, again, diversity, inclusion, accessibility, trying to get more people into golf, is like more short courses, like academy courses, 6-hole courses, to give people like a more fun and
introduction
into the game, where they can carry on and stay playing that form of golf. That's all they ever want to do. But it also is like a means to graduate people from that form of golf into on-course golf, if you like, which is traditionally what we consider 18-hole golf. I think he probably talks maybe also about like the likes of Pop Stroke that I mentioned in the last episode that you and I did in Florida, that Tiger Woods themed place, you know. But he also spoke about independent golf media, which I think what I love about some of the golf influencers that are out there are, you know, they are portraying golf in a much more fashionable and cool way, which I think will naturally appeal to a much wider group of people who may otherwise have historically ruled themselves out of the game. So I think that side of things can only be a good thing. So look, I think it's probably a fairly good place to start to wrap things up. As I said before, I would love it if our listeners got in touch. You can get in touch with us on the golfyourselfhealthy.com, go to the contact tab. There's a spot there that you can fill in and send us in your feedback on the podcast. You know, anything that you're particularly enjoying about the show, any ideas that you have for
Can I suggest something for future things?
Yeah.
If any listeners want to send in their Eagle Has Landed stories, that'd be quite entertaining for us to read out. And then the other thing was, we talked last time about the cut it out thing. Oh. And you asked me to come up with one.
Okay, let's finish on that then, Ben. Let's finish on that.
I'm going to call out somebody on this, because this is the thing that does bug me a fair bit on the golf course. My brother, Matt, takes far too many practice putts. Far too many. You stand over it and he's taking 5 or 6 practice strokes before he steps up to his putt. Matt, stop it. All right? If you do that when we're in the 2K, I'm going to sling your putter into the nearest lake. You're gonna have to swim out and get it. It's so annoying. I reckon 2 or 3 is an acceptable amount. 5 or 6 is too many. All right.
Does he even have a putter at the moment? He had his car.
He had his collapsed it. So that'll be quite interesting to see what happens in that. So, he hasn't got any at the moment. I haven't spoken to him for a couple of weeks. I'll try and find out if he's...
Do you know how we were given a call to action to the listener at the beginning to maybe donate to our Just Giving page for Golf for Sands?
Have you got any left-handed golf clubs for a short fat lad? My brother is in desperate need.
Bless him. Yeah, help a brother out. Help a left-handed brother out.
Yes, yeah.
So, and preferably a putter that, you know, channels the take less practice swings and just commit to...
Yeah. Maybe give him a long putter.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember he had another set of golf clubs nicked out of the back of his car as well. I don't know why he's being targeted. Who's stealing left-handed golf clubs?
Maybe there's a flat market or like a corner of the internet and eBay or whatever. See,
he had his putter and three wedges nicked out of the back of his car, right? So for about a year, he didn't have a putter or wedges. And I remember we were playing at Richmond once and he was playing out of bunkers with a 9-iron because that was all he had. And I think he might have been putting with his hybrid at the time. And then he ended up taking my old putter, which was a right-handed one. And he putted right-handed for about 2 years. Until he actually bothered to get himself a left-handed putter. Yeah. He putted quite well as well. He's a decent putter with his right hand.
Wow.
I wonder if he took less putting strokes, practice strokes when he was playing right-handed than he did when he was left-handed. That would be interesting.
I bet he did, because there is something there, I think. Because I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but when you've kind of like, I bet you have, because I certainly have, is when you've kind of got to that stage in your golf round and it's going very badly and you're like, I don't care anymore. And you step up and whack it. And it
And it's that just went like, in. That result.
Oh, do that more often, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, ironically, that is something that Neil is getting me to work on in my coaching session.
Thinking about
is,
less. Practice swing less. Are you one of these as well, then? Are you 15 practice swings?
No. It's less about practice swing. It's about walking up to the ball, standing over it, and loads of swing thoughts going going on in my head before I actually just commit to hitting the shot.
Sure, in your convictions, just go up and hit the damn ball and then move on.
Right. That's right. Anyway, Ben, until the next time, well, actually, the next time we do this will be on the day itself, Friday the 14th of June.
Nice. So well excited.
Can't wait. All right, Ben. Thanks a lot.
Cool,
thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care.
No worries. Bye.